All right, welcome to a Tuesday edition of AFC North Talk. I am Tony Serino. I will be your host today on the show. We're going to be recapping week three in the AFC North, including that win by the Chiefs over the Baltimore Ravens. We'll also talk about the Browns win over Washington, the Bengals with a tie over the Philadelphia, to the Philadelphia Eagles, whatever that game was. And then the Pittsburgh Steelers, we'll talk about their win over the Houston Texans. Before we do that, let me introduce my co-host today. We have from the Cleveland Browns. You can find him by searching Quincy Carrier on YouTube. Quincy, how you doing today?
I'm doing fine. How are you guys doing today?
I'm feeling 3-0 today.
We're starting now. All right, Ace. Let him know who you are, man.
Ace Boogie.
With the hoodie on.
With the hoodie. 0-2-1. That's how I'm feeling right now.
Yeah,
feeling like the Marvin days are still here. That's how I'm feeling.
It's a weird game. We'll get to that one for sure, because that was a really strange game. Second time the Bengals and Eagles have tied in like the last two times they played. So right. It's a strange one. And hopefully we'll be joined by Sonny at some point tonight. He represents the Baltimore Ravens. You can find him on YouTube, SZG Sports. But guys, let's start with that. Let's start with that Bengals game against the Eagles. Like I said, Ace, what a strange game this was. As we talked about on Thursday last week, felt like this was a real chance for the Bengals to get their first win of the season. Carson Wentz not playing well. Carson Wentz didn't play well in this one. Joe Burrow, I thought, had another pretty solid performance. What are the takeaways from a tie for the Cincinnati Bengals right now?
Well, I mean, I think Bengals fans, we felt the past 3 weeks, you know, the Bengals should have at least gotten a win. You know, they should be either 3-0 or 2-1 at worst, honestly. I think the takeaways from the game were that this coaching staff is way in over their head. Zach Taylor, this guy is off to one of the worst starts. The only person outdoing him is Hugh Jackson in his first 19 games, and that's only by one game. So that puts it in perspective. He's just as bad as Hugh. One of the worst starts in NFL history. Zach Taylor is, you know, saying, "Hey, Hugh Jackson, hold my beer. I might be right after you." So from that perspective, the bad coaching, the bad play calling. I mean, at one point in this game, the best cornerback for the Eagles goes out in Darius Slay. And Zach Taylor says, "Hey, I'm going to run the ball three straight times." Like, that was the kind of day that it was. Now, Joe Burrow was amazing. I mean, Joe Burrow has continued to get better every week. And he finished this week with a top five passing grade in PFF. However, he's one of the most pressured quarterbacks on the dropback. He is the number one guy when it comes to that. Tyler Boyd exploded this game. Another pleasant surprise. T. Higgins exploded this game. Had two touchdowns, in one game, more than Hollywood Brown has had on his entire season. And then you look at the other things, the offensive line, 8 sacks. 4 hurries and 1 sack for Bobby Hart, 6 pressures. Tony loves his pressures. And PFF credited the line with 4 sacks, which I'm assuming that they're trying to say 4 of them were on Joe. But, you know, 11 hurries, 21 pressures. Oh, my God. It was just a cluster for the offensive line. The Bengals are going to get Joe Burrow killed. And he's playing admirably.
He took a big shot in this game, too. Right? I mean, that one shot he took was, I mean, that's the kind of thing you can't do. You can't have your rookie quarterback taking those kind of shots.
Definitely, and he took way too many of them. On defense, they bounced back. Carl Lawson had a game with 2 sacks, but he also really stood out against the run. They made that a priority. Logan Wilson had a great day for us. Jesse Bates bounced back, and the defense was there. They forced the turnovers. I said that we had to go into this game, force Carson Wentz to throw turnovers. They did it, but they did not capitalize on them, and there were just big mistakes that defense did allow right before the half and right in the fourth quarter at the end, right before overtime. They allowed two drives by Philadelphia, one that was penalty ridden and another where a guy was just wide open that essentially apparently Doug Peterson ran earlier in that game. So the actual takeaways are Zach Taylor is garbage and that this offensive line is trash. But this coaching staff that he put together with Jim Turner and these guys, they just are not getting results out of this team. They're really underperforming and they're really being outcoached by nearly everyone in the league.
Yeah. Quincy, what'd you make of this game?
Yeah. One, just to jump on that Jim Turner thing real quick. Googled his history. Don't know how he got hired. That must be a buddy system hire. I don't know. Yeah. That sounds, especially like when Bob Wiley's just out there, pretty good offensive line coach with a great history, just ready to take a job. You just kind of took him. Kind of kind
you
of
know, you guys you guys did get Brian or Bill Callahan from us. You know, we only have his son. It just would have only made sense to say, hey, Dad, why don't you come to Cincinnati? But, you know, we're going to take Jim Turner. We're good.
Bill Callahan's done a great job. You see, Wyatt Teller last year wasn't very good at all. Turned his he's now one of the best offensive guards in football. Bill Callahan, not a great head coach, but, you know, a good offensive line coach. The bad left tackle, well, the bad tackle bowl was happening there when you had Jason Peters, who's no longer Jason Peters. He's so not Jason Peters anymore. That man out there is just somebody wearing a Jason Peters jersey. Might be EDP out there. And then Bobby Hart. Whew. I don't even know how mad I can get at, like, if when it comes to Fred Johnson and Bobby Hart, right? Is it both of them, or is one so bad that it gives the other not a chance? Like, I tend to think Fred Johnson is bad, like Fred the Sled's bad, but like he is not helped out because Bobby Hart probably helps him out zero with how he plays. So I don't even know what to do with him. William Jackson, you know, how has he played? Like, I haven't.
William to me has actually been pretty solid. Like, based on everything that we've had thus far this season, he hasn't really given up too many huge plays outside of the OBJ game. He really bounced back from that, and he played pretty solid. But, I mean, the Eagles didn't have literally anyone in this game, so it was kind of easy to kind of do that.
Yeah, and then here's the biggest problem with that offensive line. It's not just that they can't pass protect and keep Burrow safe. It's that they're awful at pass protection. They get Joe Burrow hit a lot, and they can't run block to save their life. That's the problem. If they could run block things, you guys would have like two wins. I promise you, you would have two wins because you could run the ball with Joe Mixon in the red zone and you would score because Joe Mixon's good. But you can't run block in the red zone when they know you're going to do it because you've been awful in that area. You've been getting torn up. Joe Mixon has to make three cuts to get to the line of scrimmage. By the time he gets to the 5-yard line, he's exhausted. It's horrible to watch. And now you end up with stat lines like what Joe Mixon had, what, I think, what, 10 carries for
17 carries for 49 yards.
49 yards per carry. Joe Mixon is much better than that. That is the offensive line being just bad. And like, you can be bad in one area, but you can't be bad in both, because now their best chance to win is Joe Burrow dropping back, throwing it a million times. And how is Joe Burrow going to get hurt? By doing that exact thing with no offensive line help. Also, you have no tight ends anymore. All your tight ends got hurt, and tight ends are a nice glue to have on a bad offensive line. The Browns in 2018, I always point to this, had the same offensive line that they had in 2019. The 2018 was good. The 2019 was bad. What changed? They got rid of all the blocking tight ends. That is a massive band-aid that you could do to help. Maybe they could sign some tight ends between the weeks, but I don't know if there's going to be anybody good enough to go out there. And also, my last note on this game is like, yo, AJ, help Joe. Do something. Get open. That, yo, where are you at, AJ? I gave you the pass against the Browns because AJ Green just historically has never really torn up the Browns. Like, that's not been his thing. He does it against the Ravens. I don't know what he does against the Steelers, but like the Browns, he's had a couple statless games against Joe Hayden. So I've never really judged AJ too harshly on what he does against the Browns because it's always been kind of an anomaly in those games. But dog, you gotta do something, AJ. Like, I understand Tyler's getting these touches, T. Higgins is getting these touches, but you're still AJ Green. Like, right. Can you just not get open? Are you done? Like, even Anquan Boldin, when he was old and lost his speed, what little speed he had, was still able to get open. So AJ, like, what is it? Because it's not the quarterback, it's not Joe. So, you know, a lot of questions to answer when it comes to just the support for Joe Burrow. And in basketball, this is fine because you can't get hurt because you don't have support. But in football, this is something that makes me nervous to watch the Bengals, because Joe Burrow is really good, but man, are they playing with fire every week by letting him get hit as much. Like, it is not just the sacks, it's how often he gets hit after he throws the ball. And that's when you really can get injured as a quarterback, when you're in that throwing motion and you get hit. And it's like you're playing with fire. And honestly, you haven't even played Calais Campbell. You haven't even played the Steelers. Like, what is TJ Watt going to do to him? Yeah, Washington, you haven't played them. Like, what are they going to do once they play some of these? Like, the Browns are probably the best defensive line they played. And, like, I'm not convinced the Browns are really that deep to attack them. Like, these teams are going to attack him. And at that point, like, if I'm Joe Burrow, I don't know what you should be expected to do other than get hurt. And if he gets hurt, like, this could be another Andrew Luck situation if they're not proactive about it now. So, like, Zach Taylor, if he doesn't want to do something to fix this, if he doesn't want to put Joe in a better position, he's got to go. Like, yeah. He's just – Joe Burrow is much more important than figuring out what you got with Zach Taylor. It's patently obvious. So that's my thoughts on where the Bengals are right now after that tie. I do think if they fire Zach Taylor or make some strong adjustments, that's a team there that can win some games this year. But it's just like that offensive line has to be adjusted. Like, he has to stop getting hit, and you have to find a way to be average at run blocking at the very least. Like, you have to hit league average in those areas, or else you will be, you know, 3-13 or 4-12.
Right. Okay, so firing Zach Taylor, though, it's a little early, right? I mean, we're what, game 18, game 19?
I mean, they're not going to fire Zach Taylor during the season, but after the season, it's definitely a strong possibility if he doesn't get this thing together. You know, he's just not putting players in the right position to win. He's not game planning effectively. Like Quincy talked about, AJ had one target in the first half. And then they finally started going to him in the second half. And some of it is, like, some people are saying, you know, are receivers not getting open? They don't have time to get open. And that's on Zach. Like, he's created a scheme where these guys have to do these long routes. Like, we don't have Bobby Hart at right tackle and these guys that are going to whiff. So, like, there was a play where AJ got open, Tyler Boyd got open, but he can't even get the ball to him because there's, like, a defender crashing him in the side of his face before these guys even finish the route. So,
And you brought up one excellent point that I thought I should bring up that makes me extra nervous about Joe Burrow. You mentioned Bobby Hart there. And the problem with Bobby Hart is that, like, that's not somebody you drafted. You got to keep to see what you got. Like, you resigned Bobby Hart. Like, that was a
after decision. He gave up 10 sacks. A season after Bobby Hart gave up 10 sacks, they said, hey, you know what? Let's give you a brand new deal and a good deal. Like, like Bobby Hart should never have gotten that deal in his life. And they gave it to him.
Yeah, and that concerns me because, like, ooh, who are you going to sign to help? And should Joe Burrow trust it? Like, because that evaluation is flawed with Bobby Hart.
I do think that the Bengals are in some ways a little ahead of schedule. I mean, they've been competitive. I know they weren't really in that game against the Browns. The final score was probably closer than the game was at certain points. But, you know, look, this is a Bengals team that's been in two of these games, two winnable games. And I understand your frustration, Ace, and that, you know, the Bengals haven't been able
to win. Oh, no. We were in the Browns game, and then Zach Taylor decides to call, like, a read option with Joe Burrow from, like, the 8-yard line.
In the red zone. Yeah, I remember that.
We were in that game. It wasn't like the Browns just were running all through us. We were in that game.
And they had a chance to kind of flip it so that the Browns – what the Browns were able to do is they just could score every time.
They scored every time they had the ball. Yeah.
So it was like, they're not going to take the lead. But that was an opportunity we had to drive to take advantage of it.
Right.
And get ahead.
And then Zach Taylor was like, I'm going to neck Taylor.
The one thing about this team is it has been interesting to watch Joe Mixon so far, because I figured Joe Mixon would have a much easier start to the season. Now, looking at his stat line so far, I just imagine, like, well, it's got to be that they're, you know, teams are crowding the box on him, and that's why it's so hard to run. But looking at next gen stats, he's only faced 7% of the time, 8-man boxes. So it has been interesting. And I think, you know, that probably speaks to Ace, what you're talking about, this offensive line.
I also think that is Zach Taylor as well. I mean, some of these stretches, some of these mind-boggling times that he decides to, like, run the ball, or they just really don't make sense. And honestly, it's similar to what we saw last season, where, you know, Zach Taylor's offense just didn't fit the scheme, the run blocking zone scheme, and they had to change this last season. And you would think that since they had those issues, they were past them this season, but it's like the same start that we saw last season.
Yeah. Okay, one thing I want to bring up to both of you, because the end of this game boggles my mind. I cannot understand, for the life of me, cannot understand what happened on the last possession. So the Eagles have the ball with a chance to kick a field goal, try and win the game. They elect to punt instead. They had a false start, so they elect to punt instead.
Which DJ Reader started, by the way. He did some kind of thing to make them some kind of, like, hard count or something like that, apparently, to cause that guy to go offsides.
So they were originally going to kick, what, like a 60-yard field goal, and then it would have been 65 or something like that at the end?
Yes.
So my question to both of you is, would you rather lose by your coach trying a 65-yard field goal but trying to win, or would you rather tie because your coach decides, let's just take the tie, we'll punt on this one?
Dog, like, at least, like, you don't even have to do that. Make an attempt to make it look like you tried to win the game, though. Like, you don't have to kick the field goal. If you're that far out, I understand why you don't want to kick the field goal.
Hail Mary, maybe?
Yeah. But, like, you know, do one of them under lateral plays where, like, hey, look, you can run the clock out. You can get all the time off the clock or get a lot of time off the clock. Advance the ball downfield somewhat, but throw that thing around to give you some hope that you might be able to win the game. You can't just go. Like, I get it. If your kicker is sorry, you don't want to. Like, why kick a 70-yard field goal that they can return and score back?
Well, their kicker is good. He's made, like, a 60-yarder before. Josh, Jake Elliott has. The Eagles kicker has.
Was it Philly, though? Was it windy?
It was in Philly, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, don't remind me of Jake Elliott. We used to have – sorry, guys, but we used to have Jake Elliott, and we made the decision to cut Jake Elliott for Fat Randy, who we have now. So I was just like, this is it. Like, we've been stalking Jake Elliott since we cut him because he was good for us. We didn't understand why they got rid of him. And I was like, oh, this is typical Bengals. Like, we cut Jake Elliott 3 years ago, and here he is. He's going to actually kick a game-winning field goal against us while Randy shanks other game winners. But luckily, their coaching staff was not smart, which I was kind of puzzled by Doug Peterson.
Yeah, you got to do something to make it look like you're trying to score. And by the way, Ace, I feel bad for you because now you went from like, man, we got Fat Randy to, oh, my God, Fat Randy, you better make all your field goals because Austin Seibert is on the bench rubbing his hands like, I can't wait to get my – well, I want to give a shout-out to Austin Seibert because I know he saw Harrison Bucker miss them two field goals at M&T Bank Stadium. I promise you, he was making all the excuses. It's just hard to kick there. You know, people don't understand. It's easy to miss an extra point in the field goal. And Harrison Bucker, one of the best kickers in the NFL, does. He's like, see, it ain't me. See, Cleveland messed up. Haven't missed a field goal since we cut him. But hey.
Fat Randy, 3 for 3 in this game.
Oh, God.
He's kicking how well.
Long it lasts. Having Austin Seibert kick at your practice is an automatic confident booster for the other kicker on your team because, like, I ain't that bad. Like, I belong in the league if that's what else they got.
All right, let's move on here. Let's talk about the Cleveland Browns, their win over Washington on Sunday. Quincy, we'll start with you. I believe I read this correctly. This is the first time the Browns have had a winning record since 2014. The Browns are 2-1.
Yeah, since Johnny Manziel blew it for the Browns this season, they started 7-4. That was back when Johnny and Josh, the best friends, they were actually best friends for terrible reasons that we cannot divulge onto this show. But they were best friends that completely ruined a decent team coached by Kyle Shanahan. I do think it's kind of fitting that Kyle Shanahan was a part of this staff the last time this team was over 500 as the offensive coordinator, and now we run the Shanahan system, essentially, and now, look, we're over 500. Kind of says that Cleveland should probably just run that system for their entire franchise history because it seems like something that works. But, yeah, the Browns went over 500 here. That's a great milestone for the fans. Woo-hoo. Doesn't mean diddly-doo for the season, though. But, you know, it's great to just finally not be under 500, which I didn't realize it'd been that long. Like, I thought we was at least, like, you know, 1-1-1 was technically over 500, I guess, because it counts as a 0.5. But, yeah, so interesting game there. Baker did what he had to do. I went into this game thinking Baker didn't really have to do much. He just had to make the plays that were there and not turn the ball over. Exactly what he did. He didn't have a lot of yards, but he made the plays when he needed to. Third and long with Odell in the fourth quarter after they had went down to Washington. Big drive there. If he doesn't convert, Washington takes the momentum, finds Odell, gets the third and long. Big play there. Later on in that drive, makes a big play on the scramble. Nobody opens, finds Harrison Bryant in the end zone. Boom. Touchdown stuff. That's what you need to see out of Baker Mayfield. Again, people get the misconception because just because you have to limit Baker Mayfield, that automatically means he's a game manager. He's not a game manager. He can make plays. He just is not there at his development where you could do what they did with Big Ben in year 6 or year 7, where they were like, hey, empty, throw the ball 50 times, make a play, Ben, do 7 does what 7 does. Like, well, that's what Mike Tomlin says all the time, right? That's when he could do that. But first 5 years with Big Ben, under 500 attempts, a lot of running the ball, rely on your defense. Big Ben can make those plays when those opportunities are there because he's not a game manager. He's very skilled. But, you know, if we're not going to force it with Ben when he's young because he's not there yet. Exactly what the Browns need to do with Baker Mayfield. Did what he had to do, made the big plays. I'm pleased with what I saw out of Baker. You know, didn't have the best game, got caught up there in the third quarter, but everybody got caught up there with the win going towards that end zone. Nobody scored in the end zone the entire game, both Browns and Washington. The defense, man, Shout out to Dwayne Haskins, because he was the best defensive player for the Cleveland Browns. Man, was terrible. You know, I don't want to dismiss what the linebackers did. They got two interceptions. B.J. Goodson got three turnovers or something like that. But, yeah, you know, Dwayne Haskins was just bad. Like, he just was staring down receivers. You know, and it's important to take advantage of that, because the Browns haven't taken advantage of that. And I think one of the things that are key with this win is that the Browns look like they, quote-unquote, learned how to win. You know, that's a take that a lot of people have used against the Browns, that they don't know how to win. This week, they look like a team that knows how to win, right? When Kansas City is down against the Chargers, they go, yo, these are the Chargers. Let's turn it up. Win real quick. Boom. They do it. Browns realized they were playing against Washington, realized they should beat them. Beat them by two scores by the end of it, went up ahead, got the turnovers, did what they had to do. Dwayne Haskins, pretty bad at this point in his career, did not play well. What am I concerned about this game? The running game had a little bit of an issue getting off early against this defensive line when they were all there for Washington. Chase Young and Matt Ioannidis got hurt, so they couldn't. They then got the run game going after that. It looked like the pass rush was kind of getting to Jedrick Wills a little bit too early on. He had a couple penalties that he needs to clean up there. And then the defense, again, the defensive secondary has been a problem. Miscommunication has been a problem. It's going to be a huge problem against Dallas. Dak's going to have, CeeDee Lamb? What's the guy's name? Dwayne Gallup. And
new guy they got, I don't even know who no one knows who he is, but he lit it up for the Cowboys this week.
Yeah, Amari Cooper. They got so many weapons out there in Dallas that's going to be a problem for the secondary, quite frankly, if they come in and play just like it was a problem against Joe Burrow. And I think Dallas is a little bit better of a version of what Cincinnati is at this point. So that's going to be a massive issue for them. It's going to be interesting to see how this offense comes out and see how they play to kind of counterbalance that, because they're going to have to score points. But all in all, you did what you had to do. You showed what you had to show. It's not a win that I'm going to go, oh, the Browns are definitely making the Super Bowl because of this win. You know, I'm not going to get carried away with it, but they're 2-1. They look good. They beat the teams they're supposed to beat, and now they play Dallas, and, you know, we'll see how they look there, but take it a game at a time.
The Dallas receiver I was talking about is Cedric Wilson, and I believe the Steelers used to have a wide receiver named Cedric Wilson. He used to play for the Saints, then he played for the Steelers. I legitimately, for a second, when I was watching this Seahawks-Cowboys game, I thought it was the same guy. I was like, there's no way, like, 37-year-old Cedric Wilson is still playing. It's not. It's a different guy. It's a different guy. Ace, what did you think about the Browns game on Sunday?
I mean, I think, like my man Quincy said, Dwayne Haskins pretty much gift-wrapped this game for the Browns, and the Redskins are likely going to be taking another signal caller in the 2021 draft. I mean, this team is not good. They're great on defense, but the offense is just completely atrocious, and we said that this game was going to be won in the trenches, and this was going to be the Browns' offensive line against that front with the Redskins, and according to PFF, they gave up 4. NFL says 2, though. Like, NFL.com says 2. And they were somewhat a little bit relieved when Chase Young exited this game. I believe did he stay out of the remainder of the game, Quincy?
Yeah, he was in shorts and a t-shirt. That's concerning for Washington. Yeah.
Right. They might be fitting him. Yeah. So Chase Young goes out of that game. Like Quincy said, Wills gave up 2 sacks. That's a little concerning, but when you look at the rest of his grading in terms of pass blocking and run blocking, he had a solid game. So it wasn't that he was too bad in any other areas. This Browns offensive line is legit. The Bengals fans right now, we're very jealous of the Cleveland Browns offensive line, especially being that they went out this offseason and did what our front office should have done and went out and got guys there, drafted guys, put a tick of weakness and, you know, strengthened it. And not only did that, also, you know, hired Bill Callahan as your offensive line coach. You know, that might help. but I think Stefanski is doing what I kind of said that he should have done from the Ravens game, right? He's putting Baker on the Andy Dalton diet without interceptions, where he's relying on that run game. He's not putting the ball into Baker's hands too much to make him win the game. And Baker Mayfield's a way better player than Andy Dalton, but going off of the season and the things that happened last year, you have to build this guy's confidence up. And the last thing that you want to do is have him throwing the ball 50 or 60 times against one of the best defenses in the NFL. And they relied on the run game. They weren't great in this game, but they got the W. And the key to this game, when you really look at it, there's really some similar stats offensively, because both teams really didn't do, you know, they didn't fly off the charts offensively, but it was turnovers. Washington had 5. The Cleveland Browns had none. And they also had 2 fumbles as well. Was it 3 interceptions and 2 fumbles?
It was 3 interceptions, 2 fumbles. But one of those fumbles happened right at the end of halftime.
Right. Well, so five total turnovers, let me say, and the Browns committed zero, which is what you want. That's what you want from Baker. Now, obviously, there's going to be other games like maybe Dallas and other games where, yeah, you're going to have to air it out. You don't have to do that against Dwayne Haskins and the Washington Redskins. So they did what they needed to do and got the dub.
Yeah, I agree. I think, you know, this game felt a little Brownsy a little bit in the third quarter. I talked about this as a barometer game, as a barometer game for the Browns last week. You know, they look, this is a team they should beat, right? They should beat Washington right at this point. They're, you know, they're far more talented. When they went behind in the third quarter, I think everyone kind of went, oh boy, is this really going to happen right now? And what you have to be impressed, I think, Quincy, you hit on this, right, is that you had those back-to-back touchdown drives right after. I mean, there was an immediate response from this Browns team to come back, take the lead. And defensively, you know, it wasn't just that the offense went down and took the lead. Then defense got a couple turnovers in a row to really take this, not just take the lead, but put this game away as a 10-point game at the end there. I was pretty impressed. I mean, I think, you know, for the Browns right now, you know, at this point, you know, you're trying to evaluate what you got, right? You're trying to evaluate, you know, is the running game going to be like we want it to be with a 1-2 punch between Chubb and Hunt? I think all signs at this point point to yes, and it wasn't too hard to figure that one out, right? Chubb and Hunter, just very good players. On the offensive line, I guess, you know, if I'm a Browns fan, obviously you're happy you got the W. You're a little concerned because you would have liked to seen your tackles go up against Chase Young, right? Just from an evaluation standpoint, hey, where are we through 3 weeks? You'd like to see them. I mean, I think Chase Young only played like 16 snaps or something in this game.
Yeah, still got to go against Montez Sweat, who's
I forgot Washington has Montez Sweat. He's good. He was really good coming out of college.
That defensive line is stacked. That defensive line over there is stacked.
Let me tell you something. He's especially good if you run at Montez Sweat. That's a mistake. Don't run at Montez Sweat. He is long and strong, and he is a man on that edge when it comes to the run game, especially. Montez Sweat is somebody to look for.
Yeah. But the difference in this game was that Dwayne Haskins went full Oprah on this one, and he just said, you get a turnover, you get a turnover, everybody gets a turnover. And that was the end of that one. So, look, I think Quincy, this was a solid win for the Browns, and, 2-1 right now, but I think, you know, you're starting to build towards what I think the hope was in Cleveland. The Stefanski can turn around the mentality of this team, right? That you can have that kind of winning mentality. You talked about like learning how to win football games. The fact that the Browns went down in this game in the third quarter, I know is concerning, obviously. But the fact they were able to come back from that in those couple drives afterwards, I think that should give this team some confidence. And especially going into the weeks that are coming up. I know they played Dallas this week, like you were talking about. That is going to be a really interesting game on Sunday.
Yeah. Two other things I want to point out. One, the scoring on the turnovers was very important, right? They got, 24 points off of the four turnovers that they could have capitalized on. So they capitalized, got points on every single turnover. That was incredibly critical. Baker Mayfield in the fourth quarter, back against the wall, down, has to make a play, made that drive, made those plays, did what he had to do. That's incredibly encouraging. Also, if you're a Washington fan or you're looking for some encouragement, there is no better match when it comes to college prospect and head coach than Trevor Lawrence, who reminds me a lot of Cam Newton, and Ron Rivera, who got the best out of Cam Newton, to the point to where if you watch New England, they do what Ron Rivera did with Cam Newton most of the time, except for they run it with him out of shotgun more than they do under center. But, yeah, you know, some encouraging thing for both sides. If you're a Washington fan, I would just give up on Dwayne Haskins. Like Ohio State should have given up on Dwayne Haskins, by the way, in camp that one season, instead of telling Joe Burrow, hey, just go to LSU. What's Joe Burrow going to do at LSU? Other than throw 60 touchdowns and win a national championship while Ohio State lost to Purdue. Shout out to that decision, Urban Meyer. Don't let him coach in the NFL because he will make a terrible decision at quarterback. This is the guy who picked Tim Tebow over Cam Newton. This guy is not – he's a good college quarterback evaluator, but he is a terrible NFL quarterback evaluator. So, you know, shout out to Urban. Urban's great, though. I like Urban. He won a national championship at Ohio State, you know. I don't got beef with Urban Meyer at all.
Am I back? No, I'm not back.
Yeah, you're back. Legend.
You're back.
I'm not back.
You're back.
You're back.
Oh, he must be going out.
Am I back?
We've been saying
Can you hear us? He must not be able to hear us.
Oh, your audio. We can hear you. It's your audio to your headset. But yeah, Urban Meyer has been pretty good. But let's jump in to this last game. Hopefully we can get Tony back soon. Pittsburgh versus the Texans, you know, Pittsburgh going into play Houston. Ace, let me get your thoughts on this game real quick.
Yeah, I mean, the Pittsburgh Steelers, they took care of business. The Texans got up on them early, 14-3. And the Pittsburgh in this game, they really used all of their running backs. So I know Tony was having a wet dream with this one, with McFarland jumping in there with Snell and Connor. But Connor ended up being the guy. He ended up getting 109 yards. You also got Eric Ebron, 2017 Eric Ebron involved. And the Pittsburgh offense just really got rolling in the second quarter.
2018 Eric Ebron. Sorry, I'm back. But 2018 Eric Ebron.
2018 Eric Ebron. But then, you know, the Texans go up 21-20. But then Deshaun really struggled against that Steelers defense in the second half. And he had a really bad fourth quarter. And Ben was the exact opposite. And he's actually one of the stats that I'm going to put out here, unfortunately, is that Ben's been clutch in the fourth quarter of games, ranking seventh. With a QBR in the fourth quarter of 125. So then the Steelers went up 28-21 and pretty much just rode Connor for the rest of the way for a win. And so they sit atop of the AFC North, but they still haven't faced a team with a win yet. And so we're really going to find out what this team is when they go against the Browns, Titans, Ravens, and Cowboys. That stretch will really show us what Pittsburgh is made of. And that secondary, we thought that it was going to be a strength, but they're going to have to improve a little bit in coverage going forward. But all in all, Pittsburgh did what they had to do, and they're at the top.
I'm back. Hi. Would you like me to talk about this game?
Yeah, we were kind of thinking you're going to jump in.
Yeah. No, I mean, listen, it feels good, man. It feels good. The Steelers are 3-0. It's 3-0 right now. I mean, it's a bonus that they're atop the AFC North. But, yeah, it feels good right now. To be watching a Steeler team that this is the first time, by the way, the Steelers have started 3-0 since 2010, the last time a Steeler team started 3-0. This game, I think Ace hit on it right there. This is a tale of two halves. I mean, this was a, you know, if there was ever a game that fit that meme where it's like, I'm not going to lie, I thought they had us in the first half. This was that game because Deshaun Watson and the Texans came out playing very, very good. Look, which we should say, like, yes, the Texans came into this game 0-2, but as we've said, like, they were 0-2 because they played the Chiefs and Ravens. It wasn't like they, you know, went out and, you know, laid an egg in their first couple weeks. They played two of the best teams in the NFL. And so this is a team that won their division last year. You knew they were going to come out and play well at the beginning of this one, especially a team led by Deshaun Watson. They're not going to go out and roll over. And they did not. Credit to Deshaun Watson. He had an incredible half of football. He lit up the Steeler defense in the first half. But what I loved about this team and I loved about this game was the response. And it's a Mike Tomlin staple. And credit to Mike Tomlin, by the way, because I talked about last week, you didn't want to have a game where it was full of, you know, the sloppy play, the turnovers and the penalties. Two penalties in this game, no turnovers for the Steelers. So they really did clean that up in 1 week. But they have this don't blink mentality. Tomlin says, he has a saying, you know, throw style points out the window, right? Just win a football game. Don't matter how pretty it looks. Certainly the first half of this game wasn't pretty, but the second half of this game defensively, dominant. I mean, for this was probably the worst half of football we've seen from this Steeler defense in a while. But this might have been the best half of football in the second half that we've seen from the Steeler defense in a while as well. The Texans had four drives in the second half. Three of them, three and out. The other one, interception. I mean, Deshaun Watson did not move the ball. He had 40 yards, I believe, total in the second half. And they needed it. They needed it because this was a Steeler team that, you know, look, offensively in the second quarter, they did respond. They came back. What I loved about this game, 14-3, and Ben all of a sudden in this offense turned it on, two straight scoring drives to go from a 14-3 deficit to a 17-14 lead. Now, you know, Deshaun Watson would go up and score again, but they did the same thing at the end of the game, coming out in that fourth quarter, big drive, take the lead, and then get the ball back and basically end the game at that point. This wasn't a perfect performance by the Steelers by any stretch. I mean, look, you know, we could talk about the first half. It was not pretty from that defensive performance. But what I loved is that the coaching staff went into halftime, made the right adjustments, and it was as dominant as you could want. TJ Watt, by the way, you look at that last drive that Deshaun Watson had, and it was a big drive for them because they were down seven, need to go down. TJ Watt starts with just an incredible play. I mean, he took, I don't know, the right tackle, I believe, was Titus Howard. Poor Titus Howard, because that's going to be on his film forever. And if that guy's going in for a contract extension or anything, just hopefully the coaching staff doesn't get to see that play, because TJ Watt took him to school. It was an incredible play. Set the Texans behind the chains on that drive, and the Texans never got the ball back. But this wasn't Ben's best performance by any stretch. I mean, he's still getting going. I think he said after the game, you know, he's getting frustrated by the media keeping asking, like, hey, you know, did you have a good game? Do you feel like you're getting used to it yet? And he at this point, he just said, like, look, I'll tell you when I had a good game. That was his response after the game. But I will tell you this. I am impressed with Ben Roethlisberger because he's not turning the ball over. I mean, I know I killed him last week for the turnover he had because it was a bad turnover, but 7 touchdowns, just 1 interception through 3 games, that's far better than I expected early on in the year. They're just starting to get Eric Ebron involved. They're just starting to get, you know, Anthony McFarland, the rookie running back, finally got some carries in this game. I thought he looked good. Chase Claypool is getting a little bit more involved, but there's room for improvement. There's room for improvement on the defense as well. The secondary, as Ace talked about, you'd love to see Minka play a little better, although he didn't have a bad game like he had in weeks 1 and 2, but, you know, wouldn't standout play. But Steven Nelson, you'd love to see him play better. But this team is able to stop the run. They're dominant against the run right now, and they lead the league in sacks. They got another takeaway this week. So, I mean, they're playing the kind of football you want to see, which is defensively, do your thing, and offense, don't screw it up. And, you know, they're putting up points to go with it. So happy to be 3-0, and we'll see what happens going forward. I'm living the dream right now, boys.
Yeah, let me jump in here with some of my thoughts here. First thought is, nobody plays the Texans next week, right?
The Texans play the Vikings.
Thank God. I am tired of watching the Texans play football. I have watched 3 straight weeks. They were the opening game of the NFL, so we all watched that. Then they played Baltimore, so I had to watch that. And they played Pittsburgh, so I had to watch that. So 3 weeks of watching the Texans. I am glad to not watch the Texans. Not that they're like the worst team in the world, but they're pretty mediocre. Now, they're mediocre means like below average. They're right, 6-10, 7-9, kind of like that level. I don't think they're going to be much better than that. If these 3 weeks are an indicator of what they can do, I just don't think they can overcome some of their issues when it comes to just keeping Deshaun Watson upright and some of those issues those created for him. I have some notes. Juju. Where were these designs for Juju last year? Because I've seen this for like 2 straight weeks where Juju has been able to just get touchdowns being wide open underneath. And were they just not looking at Juju last year? Because like, this is a pretty effective way to use Juju. You know, you got to give credit where credit is due. They're using him right there. I literally have a note here that says Tony's going to get excited about Ebron. Tony got excited about Ebron. See, Roby Claypool. Oh, the PI on that one drive. I thought that could have went either way. I don't think that should have. I thought it should have been a no call, but like, I'm not going to sit here and be like, well, that's the only reason they lost and just hate on the Steelers in that way. Just be like, oh, yeah, you only won because the PI wasn't really that big of a deal. Let's see. Mediocre Texans. I just don't think much of them. Juju and Connor, though, have had a bounce back this season. That's important for Pittsburgh because those are supposed to be the 2 young anchors for this team. It looked like Connor had a really actual good game instead of like having like 100 yards because he had like 60 at the end of it with one rush. He had a really solid game throughout the whole thing, which was nice to see out of Connor. And Juju, again, he's been looking pretty good throughout the beginning of the season here. All in all, impressive stuff from Pittsburgh. Ben looks healthy. Juju looks good. James seems to be running better. This team is 3-0. The defensive line has been really good. The secondary, you know, I think can be pushed a little bit against a team that can block a little bit more, get some more time for them. But again, we'll see if that defensive line can negate all that. We don't know yet. We don't know a lot of things about this Pittsburgh Steelers team. I can joke all I want about how they have a college football schedule, you know, how they had the old, you know, college football preseason, because they did, but they have, right. If the Browns did this, I would be encouraged too. You know, they're 3-0. You have to beat the team in front of you. You have to win the games you're supposed to win. And these are the games they're supposed to win, you know, so they did that. You can't discredit it, but you can also acknowledge they beat, you know, the 25th, the 24th, and the 32nd ranked teams in the NFL. We can acknowledge that, but, you know, also give them credit for being 3-0. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. Now, the Steelers are in first place at the end of September, and that is a great feeling. I've been there before. Ace has been there before. I don't know when the last time Sonny was there before, but I'm pretty sure he's been before at the end of September. Now, me and Ace would probably have a horror story to tell you, Tony, to tell you to calm down here. Because in 2019, as you will remember, 2-2, well, I don't think you should calm down. You're not being overexcited, just Steeler fan. be a little bit. But in 2019, the Browns were 2-2 at the end of September. They beat Baltimore. Oh, yeah, we're going to win the division. We number one. That's 2-2.
Yeah,
they 6-10.
Right, but the Steelers are 3-0, not 2-2. That's
exactly right.
Yeah, yeah.
2018, Cincinnati Bengals. ended September 3-1. It's very possible the Steelers could be 3-1. They were 4-1 at the end of 5 weeks. I bet you Ace was pumping his chest like, yeah, we was only 2 years removed from 12-4. We about to beat this. We about to do this. We about to come back with the North is ours. We finally going to win a division. Uh-huh. We beat Baltimore. They beat Baltimore early in the season. Now, it was Joe Flacco. It wasn't Lamar Jackson.
That was bad Baltimore.
Yeah,
they needed to beat a different team that year.
Brown beat that year.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Oh, yeah. I bet Ace was feeling it. I want to go back to New Stripe City and Orange is New Black in 2018. I bet him and Zay were like, hey, they were sleeping on us. Yeah. Yeah. Andy Dalton ain't that bad.
You want to talk about what week that season ended for us? I mean, it was week six that year that the Bengals season came crashing down.
Yeah, and then they went from 4-1. They ended the season 6-10. Yeah. So, you know, anything can happen in football. I'm not wishing anything bad on Pittsburgh. Well,
are you ready? Okay, but hold on. Are you changing your prediction at all? Because you have maintained 6-10 last week.
I maintained
6-10 throughout this week. You got to change it.
If they beat Tennessee, even with all the crap going on with Tennessee right now, if they beat Tennessee, I'll upgrade them to 8-8. That's
the highest. Hold on. You're not changing it now? You're not changing it to 8-8 now? 3-0, 8-8, no?
No, I can't.
You understand they have to go 5-8 from this point. I understand you've seen it happen, but like, this is a Mike Tomlin coach team with Ben Roethlisberger at the helm and a pretty good defense. So like, you don't want to change it to like just like 8-8. I mean, again, no one's gonna hate you for 8-8.
Man, if the Steelers go 6-10 or the Steelers go 8-8 and I'm right about the 8-8, or if I'm wrong about the 6-10, I'm still gonna take the L for the 6-10. So I'm gonna hold the L for the 6-10. I'm gonna hold this 6-10 as long as I can, and then I'm gonna go to 8-8. And after I go 8-8, I can't go any higher. Like I can't then go from like 6-10, like, oh, y'all gonna go 10-6.
Well, they're gonna go 10-6. I mean, this right now, this team looks like a 10-6, 11-5 team. If I had to throw a number out there, I would say 10-6, 11-5.
Anybody would look like 10-6 and 11-5 if they played those three teams.
I don't understand the hate on the Texans. The Texans had to play the Super Bowl champion. Okay, they opened the season with the Super Bowl champion. Then they had to play the team with the best record in football last year. Okay, and then in week three, they had to play a future Super Bowl champion. So, like, I don't understand this hate for the – you know, for the Houston Texans. I mean, they had a really tough
schedule. How many games are the Texans going to win this season?
They look like a team that'll be in the you know, fighting for that seventh spot this year. If I had to guess, I would guess
seventh spot.
I think this team could easily go 7-9 or 8-8 and, you know, fight for that seventh spot. Yeah, God. In the AFC. What do you think the seventh spot's going to be in the AFC?
Is it just because they just played the Steelers that you're saying this, or did you feel like this from week one?
No, I felt like this. Yeah, I mean, I didn't, full disclosure, didn't watch a ton of the game against Kansas City, but I did watch that game against Baltimore, and I was, you know, I thought they were a decent team after that game. I thought they were far more frisky.
I've watched this team for three games straight. This team is definitely like 6-10-ish.
Well, 0-3 does weird things to teams because you start making some moves and everything. You feel like your season.
They have no offensive line and nobody to dump the ball.
Their defense isn't the same either. They don't look like the same.
They can't defend the run. I mean, they have a big problem defending the run. But I just a team led by Deshaun Watson, I have a hard time imagining that team going 6-10. But we'll see. Maybe they do end up 6-10. I mean, they certainly are on their way. I mean, 0-3 will lead you right there. All right, let's finish up here with the final game. I do want to say, by the way, Sonny can't be with us today. He is moving right now. So we got that wrong at the beginning. He is not gonna be able to join us today because he is in the process of moving. But let's talk about that Ravens game, guys, because it was a tough one for Sonny. I'm sure the Ravens lose to the Kansas City Chiefs on Monday Night Football. This was a game I said last week, this could decide the AFC. I mean, these are the two best teams in the AFC right now. And for the Chiefs to go into Baltimore, it's a huge win for them. It's a bad loss for the Ravens. Ace, I'll start with you. Your thoughts on last night's Monday night game.
I mean, last week, this was a game where I think we were split on this side. And I think it was me and Quincy that picked the Chiefs in this game.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's not a bad thing. I tried to tell Baltimore fans that last week. It's no disrespect against the Ravens and what they're doing. It's just the Chiefs are a whole nother level, right? And
yeah.
I think that some people, even Vegas, I couldn't believe that they put the odds on this. They had the Chiefs plus 150 in that game. And I was just like, okay, are they responding to what we saw with the Chargers game? And you have to remember, that's not only a divisional game, but that Chargers defense, they have two elite edge rushers as well. Right. And that was one of the things that we talked about that Baltimore has not been strong at. But then we also talk about the two offenses. And although the Ravens offense is definitely explosive, they're a team that has to play with the lead. And when you're going against a team like the Kansas City Chiefs with Andy Reid, who can literally ride up throwing it to an offensive lineman for a touchdown, you're going to be in trouble. And you're dealing with Patrick Mahomes. And this going into this game, I think everyone forgot the story this offseason about Patrick Mahomes being pissed about the NFL top 100 and being ranked behind Lamar Jackson and Russell Wilson. So these are games that this is a game he had marked on the calendar. And I think Tony as well said, this is going to decide the AFC North. I mean, not the AFC North, but the AFC in general. So with all of that riding on this game, you have to go with the Chiefs. I mean, this was a team that just really looked unstoppable against any defense. Look at the 49ers in the Super Bowl. This was a team that did that to them. And then you talk about Tyreek Hill, Travis Kelce. These were guys that you have to match. And when you look at what Lamar has, although he has some great running backs over there, you know, a solid receiver and Marquise Brown. Marquise Brown is not Tyreek Hill. Like, you know, he's not Tyreek Hill. Let's just be real. He's not Tyreek Hill. Like,
Tyreek Hill.
Guy that has John Ross on my team. They tried to say that John Ross was going to be Tyreek Hill as well. And I think I tried to tell you guys when you drafted him on this show that Tyreek Hill, like, people just throw that name out. Like, just because you ran a fast 40 time does not mean that you're going to be Tyreek Hill. Right. And this is not to say that Hollywood Brown isn't going to be a decent receiver, but there's only one Tyreek Hill, and he's in Kansas City, and he was on their team. So when it comes to trying to go against that, that's a hard team to get up and keep up with, because as soon as they go up by 14, you've got to be responding. And we've always seen whenever the Ravens are successful, they always jump out to these leads against these teams. And even last year, when you look at this same game, it was kind of similar. Once Kansas City jumped ahead, you just can't catch them. And so you're going against one of the best teams, if not the best team in the NFL. And this is a measuring stick, right? But the good thing is you got these guys early in the season, because this is going to probably be a rematch later on in the playoffs. So the thing that I can say is you have to take from this game what you can. You got to have that film, and you got to come ready when you're facing this team in the playoffs, because Lamar Jackson cannot pass for 97 yards. You know, I'm an LJ guy. He can't do that. You have to find a way to compete with this team. And Patrick Mahomes, you're going to have to throw for at least 200 to 300 or more, and you're going to have to throw a couple of passing touchdowns, and you're going to have to match them. And if Baltimore cannot do that, it's going to be a tough year. So, you know, you guys will bounce back, but this is what I expected. I expected the Kansas City Chiefs to go in and get a win.
See, I was the other way. I expected Baltimore to win this game. I thought right now they were playing better football, and I thought the Chiefs were still trying to get Clyde Edwards-Helaire involved in this offense a little bit and figure out run-pass ratio and how do we want to get everybody involved. But boy, was I wrong. Clyde Edwards-Helaire has filled in just fine on that offense. Yeah, they were terrific. And that's why I'm with you, Ace. If I'm a Ravens fan today, like, I don't feel terrible about this game. Like, I, you know, I don't know if I'd be making YouTube videos cursing, but there are certain Raven fans out there that are definitely doing that. I watched one earlier. It's a lot of fun, actually. Go ahead and search that. But, you know, I think this Ravens team is going to be just fine right now. The weird thing to me, and I said this last year after they lost to the Titans in the playoffs. It is weird to me that the best offense in football, well, I mean, whatever, second best behind Kansas City, whatever. This is a fantastic offense, one of the best offenses in the game right now. They can't come from behind. They just can't. They get behind, and it's game over, right? That is really strange to me. And what I thought, see, the interesting thing about this game, though, in particular, I put some of this game on John Harbaugh. I thought early on in this game, they got out of their own game plan. And I don't just mean, like, what they do normally, but, you know, in this game, like, they were running the ball so well early, and then they came out the next couple of drives and tried to throw because they were behind. And I thought that was very un-John Harbaugh. And also, that first drive, they were moving the ball so well. And this is a team that believes in analytics. They believe in, you know, the go for it on fourth down stuff. When they kicked a field goal on fourth and four, or it was fourth and three, whatever, on that first drive, I thought to myself, is Harbaugh playing scared? Why would he play scared? Like, you're going up against the Chiefs. You need all the points you can get. Let this thing be a shootout. But go, you know, go for the jugular here. Don't be kicking field goals. And he did it later in the game too, by the way. They were down, I think, 27-10, and he kicked the field goal. Now, I know they had a false start, which would have made it like fourth and seven or something. But still, like, you've got Lamar Jackson. You've got a great offense. Move the football. Put seven on the points. You're not winning this game by kicking field goals. So I thought that was really uncharacteristic of John Harbaugh. But overall, look, I wouldn't take too much out of this game for the if I were a Ravens fan. Two things I will say about the Ravens, though. One, they can't get to the quarterback. They cannot rush the passer right now. That is a big problem, especially for a defensive line that was supposed to be overhauled with guys like Calais Campbell, who's traditionally been a good interior rusher. They got, Derek Wolf, who I ragged on him because he had 7 sacks, but 8 pressures last year. I mean, you can just look at someone's numbers and go, yeah, this guy's definitely not putting up good sack numbers this year. And he's not. He has 0 sacks. I mean, I don't think he's going to sniff the quarterback this year. Judon, the $16 million man, he was nowhere to be found out there. I mean, they have problems rushing the passer right now. So that's going to be an issue for them going forward. But a bigger issue than being able to rush the passer, being able to protect Lamar. They can't protect on the interior. Chris Jones was in there on what felt like too many plays for Lamar. And Lamar is the kind of guy, I didn't realize this, but when he gets pressure up the middle, he can't, this is not a guy like Mahomes where he's just delivering to the check down right away. Lamar's eyes go down and he's trying to run away. And that's tough. So this team, I'm not going to sit here and tell you like, oh, the Ravens are a 10-6 football team and this proves it, right? Because they got their ass kicked by Kansas City. No, I mean, this is going to be a team that's going to be, it's still in contention for that bye week by the end of the year. But there are some concerns here. You can't come back from behind. You can't rush the passer. And you have problems protecting Lamar in week 3. I mean, this is a team I don't think anyone was expected to say this early on. The Ravens have some real holes that they need to work on going forward. And I didn't expect to say that after week 3.
I did. I saw it coming. This was a team in an offense that, they started off a little shaky. Well, not shaky, but like not as smooth. Even when they beat down the Browns, like it was more the Browns beating down themselves and the Ravens just completely outpowering them. Like if you go back and watch the game, Browns had those self-inflicted wounds where they just said, here, take the ball on the 30-yard line and score, right. Lamar. Please beat us by 30 points, Lamar. Please do it. And that's why I was really frustrated after that game. Look at week 2 against the Texans. They did what they had to do, but it wasn't that Ravens kind of like smoothness that it usually is on offense. And then coming into this week, I felt like, hey, this is a game that Kansas City could win by multiple scores. And I said that on AFC North Talk. Y'all can fact check me there. I said that. It's confirmed. And this is why I felt like Kansas City was due to have a game where they kind of turned it on after having that kind of letdown against LA. And this was the game they were going to try to turn things on. Big game. They were looking ahead. And then they did. And I thought Baltimore was due for a little bit of a letdown. Now, this is the key point in all this. Ravens are still, at worst, going to go 12-4. Still a very good football team, in my opinion. Still going to have a great regular season. But, Tony, you did point out some things that are going to be some issues in specific times of the year. Mm-hmm. In the playoffs. Some of these things that the Ravens have that are issues are going to be issues. And how we talked about Giannis in his third year in the NBA, how like that third year where he couldn't get over the hump, people start looking at him funny now. This is Lamar's in a very similar situation. And I'm starting to ask myself, are the Baltimore Ravens the NFL version of the Milwaukee Bucks at this point? A team that's going to dominate in the regular season, look really good. But if you can shut down that one thing, if you can slow it down just a little bit, then all of the support around it looks bad. All of a sudden, the coaching staff doesn't look great. All of a sudden, the play calling doesn't look great. All of a sudden, the support around him, Hollywood Brown, shout out to him, 2 receptions, 6 targets, 13 yards, no touchdown. Doesn't sound like a number one wide receiver to me. Sounds like he's a Ted Ginn type wide receiver. That's what I thought he was coming out of college. That's what he was in college, quite honestly. And then that's what he looks like so far in the NFL. So, he's a good receiver. He's not going to be your number one receiver. You don't have that. Mark Andrews, every once in a while, like Mark Andrews most of the time is really good. But every once in a while, Mark Andrews will have some of these games where he decides he just does not want to catch anything in the red zone.
Literally anything. No, just anything anywhere. It's really anywhere. It's not even the red zone. It's anywhere.
Yeah, anything. Like he will have these games. And that's part of the frustration with having Mark Andrews. I thought they should have kept Hayden Hurst because Mark Andrews can do that to you. And you can use them both kind of more efficiently than you can just rely on Mark Andrews, because Mark Andrews will do this to you every once in a while. That's just part of the bag that comes with him. The offensive line. I don't even know if it's the offensive line that's really been worse. I think it's just been Lamar's been holding the ball a lot longer. And Lamar's pocket presence isn't as great as his ability outside the pocket as a runner. Like when he's in the pocket, sometimes he tends to just stand there and get anchored and flat-footed. When he's really like trying to throw the ball downfield, he either has like one or two modes. He's either going to break the pocket and make a play, or he's going to stay in that pocket and be anchored down. That's a little bit of an issue. But again, only teams with elite pass rushes are going to be able to kind of unlock that, a Lamar Jackson. Like, the Browns aren't a team good enough to do that against them with their defensive line, even though they have Myles Garrett. So that's not going to be an issue against all 32 teams, only really good teams. And that's the problem with the Ravens. They don't have issues that are going to show up against all 32 teams, but they have issues that are going to show themselves against top 10 NFL teams, and specifically top tier NFL defenses. Or if you have an offense like Kansas City, they can get up on you by 10 points. We've seen this story with Tennessee. We've seen this story with San Diego in the playoffs. We've seen this story with Cleveland last year, where Cleveland got ahead, got some turnovers on Baltimore. All of a sudden, things change for that team. It's a real thing for Baltimore that's going to be a concern in the playoffs. Regular season, though, they're going to have fun. They're going to tell me Lamar's the MVP again, which might or might not be the case. Like, they're going to look amazing against, like, next week they play the football Washington team.
Yeah, they're going to buy. They're going to buy.
They're going to murder them.
Oh, they might score 100. They might score 100 next
week. Hey, Derek Wolf might have four pressures, four sacks in that game.
He might.
They're going to have to change their name to the Baltimore football team, because Baltimore is about to own them after next
week. Oh, no, because Washington's going to be the Baltimore practice squad, because Marcus Peters did not have a great game. But I promise you, Dwayne Haskins is going to throw an interception to Marcus Peters for every time that Marcus Peters got beat in coverage last week. So Marcus Peters might have five interceptions next week against Dwayne Haskins himself. Like, this they're going to look amazing next week. I promise you, they're going to be angry. They're going to stick to their base offense. You know, one thing I did like I saw out of Baltimore was when they did get down, they almost did come back in that fourth quarter. They got within seven. They actually did something they didn't do in the last two times they went behind, where they just said, hey, we're going to do what we do. We're going to run this thing. We're going to let Lamar get some runs here. We're going to go downfield that way, and we're going to attack like that, and that's how we're going to do things. Unfortunately, Mark Andrews drops a touchdown in the red zone, but they still end up scoring there. And
a little too late, though, it felt like.
Yeah, it's a little too late against Kansas City. Against any other team, it would have been just in time, because that was, 8 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But Kansas City – they could beat you deep real quick, or they could just decide they're gonna kill you with 1,000 cuts and take like 7 minutes off the clock if they want to, and throw it to their left tackle. So again, flaws that aren't gonna show up against everybody, but flaws that are there nonetheless. I did like that they stuck to their base offense in the fourth quarter and did what they normally do, because I think that's a much, much, much better strategy than telling Lamar Jackson, hey, we're gonna go five wide and throw it to Marquise Brown. Like, you know, why would you want to do that when you have Mark Andrews, or even, you know, just better options with Lamar on his feet than Marquise Brown, who, good wide receiver, not going to be a game changer in any game. But yeah, you know, Baltimore has some things to be concerned about, but they don't got to be concerned about it in September. They got January concerns that are going to come up in January for the rest of the year, though.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, like, what's good for them, right? Because I railed on the NFL for making this game in September, right? But I guess a plus for Baltimore can be, hey, like, we're finding out about all these issues in September, and the playoffs don't start till January. So we have all these months to figure out the interior. Now, remember, they lost Marshall Yanda. So that interior of that offensive line is worse. I mean,
Tyreek Phillips is not Marshall Yanda, and then I think that does affect how well Orlando Brown can protect on that right side. Like, that's a definite issue. It shouldn't be as bad as it is. Like, I think it's a lot to do with Lamar holding the ball a little bit too long. But what I will say to that is, this is kind of one of those situations. Lamar admitted something that I don't think he should have admitted. And this is kind of like when, the Milwaukee comparison is kind of apt, because it was like, oh, what the Toronto Raptors did with Kawhi was the same thing that, you know, the Miami Heat did with Giannis in that series. And when he said they did the same thing Tennessee did, it's been an entire offseason. And let's be honest here, we railed on Kansas City secondary saying they're not Tennessee, but they were able to do that successfully against you. That means that you can have time and prepare, but there is something structurally about the strengths and weaknesses about this team that leave it vulnerable against teams like Kansas City that can either score or apparently have enough DBs to cover. Like,
that's the weird thing. Yeah. And he said, you know, Kansas City's our kryptonite, but yeah, he did. He said schematically they did the same thing Tennessee and LA and the Chargers did back in that playoff game.
It's a massive concern.
Yeah, that is, because Kansas City, look, talent wise on defense, Kansas City's, look, they're not trash, right? I mean, they're not a bad defense, but this is, I don't think anyone considers the Kansas City defense among the top five in the NFL right now. Right? I mean, this is a team that's starting a rookie on the outside at corner. They have Tyrann Mathieu. I really liked Juan Thornhill coming out of the draft. And Chris Jones is a very good interior rusher. I think they have Frank Clark. So, I mean, they've got some players there. But, yeah, man, I'm with you. It feels like this team should have been able to move the ball much easier than it was able to, especially after that first drive. I mean, this Baltimore, I mean, you would have thought they were going up against the 85 Bears out there with how hard it felt like they were, you know, to move the ball between quarters two and three.
And I know a lot of people are going to point to the coaching staff, right? Oh, well, Baltimore's coaching staff did a bad job. And that's partly true. John Harbaugh has a history of being a little bit iffy. Greg Roman. But like, also, it's John Harbaugh and Greg Roman here. Like, these are two coaches who are very good, were very good for 2 years. And just because, you know, I have an issue with people not blaming the players and wanting to blame the coaches all of a sudden when this coaching staff was clearly one of the better coaching staffs in the NFL last year. Like, at some point, it's due to the limitations that the players impose on some of these systems. Like, you got to do better as a player to not get beat like that by Kansas City. So I get people want to blame the coaching staff and want to put all the blame on the coaching staff and not really blame the players. But like, yeah, come on now. They're Baltimore's too good for that garbage. Like, come on. That's stuff a team that's coached by like Zach Taylor or Freddie Kitchens can say because it's true. Because those are issues for real for bad teams. But when you're Baltimore, nah, son, that doesn't read it. I wouldn't buy it if Tony was telling me that the reason the Steelers had a losing streak was because Mike Tomlin. Nah, son, that's not it. But hey, go ahead, Tony.
No, I have a Colin Cowherd take about Lamar Jackson. I know we're running long, so I won't go. We'll go into it on Thursday, but I'll preview it today. Come back Thursday if you want to hear my take on why Lamar Jackson. He has the body language. His body language in these games.
Oh no!
Body language expert Tony showing up on Thursday's show. Hear about Lamar? How Lamar Jackson not a winner when he's playing for mine. Just doesn't have. He's not the guy you want to be leading your team from behind. Just not a leader. We'll talk about that on Thursday. Before we do, though, let's do our outros here. Ace, what? Let people know where they can find your work.
You guys can find me filling out my resume for an internship with the Texas A&M. Teams and the Miami Dolphins, because that's all you have to do to get hired by the Bengals, apparently. And also try to bully some of my players and stuff, just like Jim Turner does. But you can also find me writing Zach Taylor email telling him to resign. So, but yeah, you can find me at New Stripe City on YouTube and on Twitter.
Quincy, how about you? Where can people find your work?
You can find me socially distancing myself away from Tony and that take. I got nothing to do with that. Nope. I know sometimes people get it confused and think, oh, Quincy said. Quincy did not say that. That is not a Quincy Carrier take. But, yeah, you can find me on YouTube.com, Quincy Carrier. You can also find me on Twitter, at Quincy. And you can also find me in Marquise Brown's face for the rest of the week because that man told me he was Tyreek Hill, had 2 receptions. Out of 6 targets, by the way, the real Tyreek Hill, 6 targets, 5 receptions, 74 yards, 77 yards, my bad, 77 yards and a touchdown. That's what Tyreek Hill actually looked like.
Remember what we said about Travis Kelce? Travis Kelce's pretty good at football.
He's not bad. He's not bad at football.
Only pray. Prayers were not answered.
Now, I bet at one point Mark Andrews and Hollywood Brown were looking next to each. We're standing next to each other, being like, that could be us. That could be us. If we work a little harder, that could be us.
Great value version.
Are you guys? Hey,
we got Tyreek Hill and Travis Kelce at home.
Great value, Brian.
All right, we're gonna wrap it up here. You guys can follow me on Twitter at Steeler Country. You can find me on Locked On Steelers every Tuesday. But also, if you're a Steeler fan, make sure you're subscribed to Locked On Steelers. Chris Carter is the host there. Does a great job. That is a daily podcast. I'm not sure if Lamar Jackson wears his hat, you know, forward or backward, but I know that that's also a big thing when it comes to quarterback play in the NFL. And it looks like on Monday night, he might have worn it backwards. I'm not sure. We'll dig into that more on Thursday. Thank you, everyone who is watching right now. Make sure you are subscribed. Subscribe to the show. We do this every Tuesday, 5:45, and Thursdays we do our preview show, also 5:45. So make sure you're subscribed for that. And we'll be back on Thursday to preview week 4 in the AFC North. We'll see you then.
Zach Taylor sucks.